Summer with George McEncrow on ABC Local Radio.
It's wonderful to have your company this evening. We're going to have a big, long chat about artificial intelligence, robotics, where those two areas intersect. I have three very special guests joining me this evening. In Queensland, I have Professor Peter Cork, who has very kindly taken time out to talk to us this evening. Thank you so much and welcome, Peter.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
I also have with me Associate Professor Dave Dow from the Faculty of Information and Technology at Monash University. Welcome to you, Dave.
Thank you very much, George.
It's lovely to have you. And Josh Ladgrove, who is a comedian but also a mechatronics graduate who has so far built...
an autonomous fighting robot.
An autonomous fighting robot that could only turn left.
Yeah. And it did very well. And I just want to, at the outset of this conversation, I'd like to say hi to our two professors, but I feel so intellectually outgunned.
Mate, it's how I spend every minute of my day. Don't worry about it.
Right.
Just be nice and okay. Everything will be fine.
I'll just pretend.
And to our callers who would like to participate at any time, please feel free to join the conversation and put to us questions. I'm not guaranteeing that there'll be an answer, but you might get a stab or a theory or the beginning of a new idea at the very least. The number to call, of course, is 1300 222 774, or you can text the program on 0437 774 774. So there's been quite a bit of media about robots. The fear is that they will take over all our jobs. What jobs, and I'll put this to all three of you gentlemen, are safe from robotics or artificial intelligence?
So people who build robots and artificial intelligence systems.
So you're safe, David. And Josh is probably going to be okay.
No, I'm not. I would almost disagree with that.
Really?
Yeah, I can't believe my opening gambit is disagreeing with the professor. I'm
well, you're
sorry.
A brave
I'm
man.
Sorry.
You're a stand-up comedian. Peter. We know that already. Go on. What? Why?
Bring it on.
Only in the interim. I disagree with it in the interim because artificial intelligence isn't at the point where it's reached self-actualization and self-awareness. Well, it has to an extent, but not enough to be able to start creating life within its own ecosystem. But eventually, I think that will happen.
And that's the thing that people are worried about right now. That's what's led to the famous open letter and so on.
Absolutely. I'm terrified.
Well, Peter, there are a lot of people who are concerned about robots, and it seems that there is every possibility that nearly every job will be consumed. Can we live alongside robots while we get freed up to do other good stuff, or will they be our overlords before too long?
It's a really good question, and I don't have a really good answer for that question. I'm sorry. But it's one that comes up every time I give a talk about robots. People ask, what about jobs? And yeah, robots have taken jobs away from people in a number of industries. The upside, though, is that by replacing human labor with robotic labor in industries like car manufacturing, for instance, or electronic manufacturing, we've actually been able to keep those industries in countries where there are high labor costs, like Australia, the United States, Europe. If there weren't robots, then those countries would not have those industries. And having industry means that it generates profits and it pays taxes and, it consumes services and things from other parts of society. So there is a benefit, even though it doesn't employ as many human beings as it used to. It still generates wealth, which is not bad.
And very often safety.
Look, safety is really important. There are a lot of jobs that, to be honest, people shouldn't do. And there are a lot of jobs that people these days just refuse to do, that a lot of people consider this job is beneath me, I will not do it. The job still needs to be done. And a good example of that is in fruit picking. There's a lot of fruit that are ridiculously labor-intensive to pick, black currants and strawberries and things like that.
It is a bloody hard job. It is a bloody hard job, Peter. I did it for six
weeks.
So I've
heard.
And I quit and I left a couple of 70-year-old Kiwis still at it, and I was ashamed of my 18-year-old self.
What do you
it's
mean?
Hard
you
work.
Walk into aisle four, pick up some apples.
I was on an orchard on a ladder. I was knackered at the end of every day. But yes.
Sore and sunburnt, yeah?
Sore, sunburnt, and poor. I couldn't pick fast enough. I was hopeless at it. But so So in terms of not wasting people, not wasting people's skills, not putting them into dangerous and difficult situations, robotics have certainly been hugely beneficial. Peter.
Yes.
Yeah.
uncomfortable silence. But it does raise the question, okay, so robots go and they pick all the strawberries. So there's no need for people to pick strawberries. You know, what happens to the people who actually like picking strawberries? You know, that's all they can do. That's all that they aspire to do. What happens to them? And then, you know, the next thing, then we'll pick apples robotically, and then we'll pick watermelons and capsicums and everything is picked. And then what? And then, you know, there'll be the next frontier for robotics. The current issue with robotics is robots as we see them today are actually not that competent, not that capable. You know, they're great at making cars, they're great at building electronics, been doing that for 50 years, that's a doddle. But to do something really complicated like, say, plaster a wall, install a sink, lay carpet, those are all things that at the moment require a lot of human skill, a lot of hand-eye coordination and so on, that at the moment robots are incapable of doing. And I don't see that they'll be doing it inside 10 to 20 years.
But I would never have seen a time when a journalist, for example, could be replaced by artificial intelligence. But, David, artificial intelligence is now writing journalistic reports.
Yes, I've heard this said that there was some breaking news recently, and I don't recall what the story was, but it was written up by a machine, and we're gradually seeing things which were previously thought to be the preserve of humans gradually being done by machines, and you know, maybe not always as well as a human could do it, but increasingly well.
And I think this is the really interesting new frontier, if I can butt in. People have been concerned about robots taking away physical labour, manual labour jobs. But people who worked in offices and did what's called knowledge work, you know, they were safe. It was only the people who did work with their hands that were in trouble. It's different now. Now there's a lot of work done by knowledge workers, people who sit at desks, which is going to be done by artificial intelligence systems. And what David mentioned, news reports, I understand short financial reports and short sports reports can now be automatically written. You just need some facts and figures, and you throw some extra words and adjectives in there, and hey, you got a short article.
Well, and these things are happening. I mean, I'm noticing it. Things I've recently had to put in an insurance claim. Now that all happens online now, but then someone was telling me that there's new and accountants' jobs are significantly at risk as well, because artificial intelligence, again, if it's a matter of punching in data, applying a series of systems of laws, and getting a total at the end, you know, is this something that we should be concerned about, or is this going to be something that is a liberating force?
I think we probably should be concerned about it. It's great if everybody's liberated, but how do you pay the bills? And that's what we need to figure out as a society. If everyone's got all this free time, then, you know, who subsidizes their lifestyle?
Josh?
I think the biggest issue with, say, your robots that pick strawberries is what happens when the robots develop a taste for strawberries and start hoarding the strawberries. Then we're finished.
Should we build flaws into our electronic, our robots and our artificial intelligence so that this conundrum can't arise?
No. They'll find a way of finding their own flaws. I don't think that we should artificially inseminate them with our idiosyncrasies.
I don't know what about insemination, but anyway, we've got a caller on line one. Dorothy, are you there?
Yes.
Thanks for holding on. What would you like to put to our guests?
Well, I'm wondering who'll decide to, when the wars come, who'll decide which country they're going to fight and who they're going to fight, and how we're going to go on there.
So any thoughts on that? So are you suggesting that a robot army or the robots making a decision as to who to...
Well, if they're going to take over the world, will there be wars?
I'll have a go at speculating on this one. Before we get to that point, before we get to the point of, say, the machines being smarter than us, there's also the issue. So I'm partly sidestepping your question. There's the issue before then of just them not doing the job that they were meant to do, or breaking down in doing the job they were meant to do. So just in December, the last month, we saw the Queensland health system software going on offline for a day, and we saw an issue with the Heathrow air traffic control system. And I believe it was only off for about half an hour, but this caused all sorts of havoc. So I'd like to modify your question to the comment that even before they might be smarter than us, we might find that we've delegated uncomfortably large amounts of responsibility, and we only come to appreciate that when
the system's down.
Yeah, when the system's not working as well as we wanted it to.
Well, I'm 88, so I'm not particularly worried.
Good on you, Dorothy. It's not going to be your problem. But look, this is something I see, you know, when people got so excited about having, you know, computers in classrooms and laptops in classrooms. And, you know, as an educator at that, right on the cusp of that time, it drove me nuts because it just seemed to be another whole series of things that kids had to battle with before they could submit their work. Write me the flipping essay on a piece of paper, and then I don't have to worry about the printer going down, you losing it on the wrong file, you know, borrowing bits and pieces from everywhere else and shoving it together.
When was this the 18th century?
Shut up. This is not very long ago, but it's something that, again, with my children contend with all the time, with their iPads and so on.
It's all cassette tapes these
going
days,
to
isn't
school.
It? And vinyl.
Listen,
and
you,
off.
I'll throw you out by your beard.
Sorry.
But you can. There was a simpler time where you weren't dependent on the system working, where there was an alternative where no piece of equipment was required other than a slate and a stick.
Yes. But
yes.
On that dependence, that's a massively important issue, because I'd say the difference now, and if you are inclined to disagree, Peter and David, please do so, but the dependence on technology is increasing at a rapid rate, to the point where we weren't as dependent on technology 30 years ago and automation and artificial intelligence. And so for an example of that is like a stealth fighter, an American stealth fighter, now is designed to be aerodynamically unstable. So without its computer system, it will just fall out of the sky.
Is that a good thing?
When it's being tracked by a missile, it has a sort of function where it simulates being taken offline.
But if
you're
having a barbecue in your backyard and a stealth bomber lands on your head, you may not be too happy just because its computer went bung.
Asking the big questions here on ABC, yeah. No, but that's the thing. It's that complete dependence on technology now, to the point where a device or a sort of vehicle won't actually function without AI. That's where we're at. It's an interesting phase.
It makes our whole society very, very brittle. Mm. And I think this concerns governments, that if you've got this big dependent on a technology and you can take it out, you can launch some cyber attack against a company or against the country. We've seen quite a bit of that lately with what's been going on with North Koreans and with Sony. You know, it does indicate something about brittleness, that you can do so much damage to a company just by attacking its computers.
Mm. Did you want to say something about that, Deb? Because I've got another caller here.
Just essentially to agree. Thanks, George.
All right, we have
George. Can I just comment on Dorothy's question?
Because I think
it's a good question. And robots are now being used in warfare, so we have to acknowledge that. I mean, everyone's seen these pictures on the evening news of, you know, drone strikes on people who are, you know, deemed undesirable in certain parts of the world. Now, so that's a robotic aircraft up in the sky, and it's firing weapons at human beings. Right now, the decision to fire that weapon is being made by somebody who sits in a control room a long, long way away. They identify the target, they push the button. So there's still, a human in the loop making that
judgment
pretty important.
Call. Yeah,
exactly right. And it's an awesomely delicate, difficult judgment call to make. But there's a lot of debate now about saying, well, that's kind of difficult and it's complicated to have this human in the loop. Shouldn't the robot just have the ability to do that all by itself? And this is a really important line in the sand. And there's people saying we should cross this line. There's a lot of other people saying that absolutely we shouldn't. So,
but I can see why governments would be drawn to that, because then it can have a sort of a hands-off approach of saying, you know, that they can – the program is the program, we can say, well, none of us actually, you know, should that turn out to be incorrect, then it's a glitch in a mechanical system and not poor ethical judgment on behalf of a regime or a government.
Yeah. But then you get to a future where your robot army battles the other guy's robot army, and then the robots slug it out and someone wins. So no people have been killed. That's a good thing. But it seems all then at that point a bit pointless. You might as well just have a board game.
Well, and that's what I've always thought. Imagine the lives that could be saved if you could just bring it down to a good game of chess.
Rock, paper, scissor?
Rock, paper, scissor, or even just two guys in a ring.
Yep.
Belting it out old school style. Ken from Wangaratta is on the line and is waiting to speak to you. Welcome, Ken.
Hi, Georgie.
Thanks for waiting. What would you like to put to the panel?
Hear me out, please. A five-year-old brain... a human brain starts off knowing no language whatsoever and gets to learn by trial and error and examples and all sorts of mechanisms, can learn to speak a certain level of English at five. When you can come up with a computer that can talk to me by any means whatsoever at the level of a five-year-old, then I'll believe in artificial intelligence. Would you like to take that one on?
Passing the Turing test.
Good, yes, this is the Turing test. Welcome. Thanks, Ken. I think you should answer that for us, David.
Well, the so-called Turing test or the imitation game, as Alan Turing called it, from which the recent film gets its title, involved a computer trying to hold down a conversation with a human judge for 5 minutes where... the human judge tried to determine whether or not it was a computer or a human. And last year, in 2014, we've just found that there was a case where sufficiently many humans were convinced that they were actually communicating with a human rather than with a computer. So to some degree, we're knocking on the door of the threshold you've just asked for, if not already gradually having overtaken it. And we're going to be seeing more of this.
Thanks for that. And Peter, what do you say to that?
Well, this whole area of machine learning where we just teach a computer how to learn and we give it lots and lots of examples of things and it can make fantastic associations. And for object recognition, for instance, that's now quite mature. So you can show a computer system a picture of a scene and it will say, you know, this is a pizza sitting on a white desktop and there's three people standing behind it. So you can present a picture and you can end up turning that into a textual interpretation. And a lot of language translation now has been done by learning, by looking at documents in one language, documents in another language, figuring out all the correlations, and that's how Google Translate works.
Mm.
It hasn't been taught. It learnt from looking at all the squillions of documents that Google's able to get its hands on.
So
that's all our emails.
So machines can learn from experience.
Hmm.
Look, if you've got a question for the panel, 1-300-222-774 is the number to call. That's 1-300-222-774. Or if you would prefer to text a question into the program, the number is 0437-774-774. We are looking at robots, artificial intelligence. What will the future look like? Is there any job that's safe, not safe? And any of your questions are more than welcome. While you think of something you might like to put to the panel, we're going to listen to Beautiful World by Devo.
So far, so good.
Beautiful world for you. time to be here. It's nice to be alive. Wonderful people everywhere. The way they comb their hair makes me want to say, it's a wonderful place. It's a wonderful place.
Fascinating stuff. It is a beautiful world. Thanks, Devo. Still. But for how long? Who can say?
I didn't play their classic.
No. Well, we've got to broaden things. That was Courtney, my wonderful producer's choice. Josh Ladgrove, comedian and mechatronics graduate, joins me. Also in the studio, Associate Professor David Dow from the Faculty of Information Technology at Monash University. And I'm very grateful to Professor Peter Cork for joining us from Queensland University of Technology. We are talking about, so Peter Cork is the robotics guy. The artificial intelligence guy is David Dow. And the guy who's a little Aussie bits of mongrel also ran. Is Josh Ladgrove. He's a mechatronics graduate, thanks. But he's robot. Could only turn left.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know that he would have got his PhD.
Do you want to know the name of the robot?
Come on.
The autonomous fighting robot?
Yep, Lefty.
Blind as a bot.
That's good.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
That's very, very good. We've had a lot of texts and things coming on saying, which would be more complex, a program that can pass the Turing test or one which can accurately judge it? I'll put that to you, David.
Yeah, I've actually written on this, not in detail. So my off-the-cuff answer is it's easier to pass it than to judge it. Now, one little thing I'd like to say by way of digression is Turing called it an imitation game, and you know, I think he wouldn't have liked us to have regarded it as a yes-no test, rather as an indication of where things are. But yeah, back to the question you asked me, I think easier to pass or get a decent score in the imitation game or Turing test than to judge it. But others are welcome to disagree with me.
What do you think about that, Pete? I'll throw it to you.
I think I agree with David. I think in order to be the judge, it's not just a matter of listening to the computer and the person and trying to figure out which is which. I think you need to formulate really insightful questions that you hope would trip up a computer, but which a human would deal with. So I think that's what makes the job of being the judge so much harder, is being able to actually formulate wicked questions.
Well, that's very interesting. We're talking during that song about the fact that we are sort of already merging with synthetic materials and so on. And Frederick has a question for us along these lines. Welcome to the program, Frederick.
Thank you.
What would you like to put to the group?
Well, with the computation and artificial intelligence, and we're aging and we need AIDS, there could be a chance in the future we'd be cyborgs.
Mm. Half and half. We're probably sort of already on the way there, wouldn't you think?
Mm. And, how would that work? Because we at the moment with the our computerising is that we formulate the programming.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's a good question. What do you think, David?
Well, some examples. So some of us wear glasses. That's a very early form of being augmented and indeed even have a pen and paper to help assist you as a memory aid is an earlier form of augmentation. There are hearing aids and there are robotic vision, artificial eye groups, I might call them, at Monash University and University of Melbourne. At University of Melbourne, they're trying to develop effectively an artificial retina, and at Monash University, they're trying to develop a cortical implant to be attached to the brain. So, yes, down the track, we might become cyborgs. And to another part of your question, as I heard it, there might well come a time when the computers start writing more and more of the software themselves. So that's my two cents worth.
That is very interesting. And the other thing I've been thinking about, we did a program recently on those printers, that 3D printers, and that more and more people can now get cheap prostheses to help in their lives. So that more and more people will be able to have access to these things. Professor Peter Cork, I'll put it to you. What do you think about the cyborg question?
I think it's going to come. I mean, we have prosthetic limbs, which are really robotic devices, which are very intimately connected to our bodies. They're connected to our nerves, and they control electric motors and whatever in the artificial leg or the artificial arm. But you could take it a whole lot further, and there are people who, quite smart people who very seriously talk about being able to upload their intelligence into a computer. So it's people like, I think, Hans Moravec, maybe Ray Kurzweil talk about this, that you no longer exist in any sort of physical sense, but your ideas, your consciousness, if you like, is uploaded to a computer. Now, whether that's still you or not, I don't know. To me, it's a little kooky, but, I mean, people are talking about going further than cyborgs.
I want ideas taken out of my head, not more ideas put back in there. That's what I'd like, someone to download my ideas of an evening and pop them back in the next morning.
I think the stumbling block here is that eventually it's not entirely inconceivable that we'll reach a point where we can replace all of the sort of primary functions of our body. So replacing the heart, we understand the heart.
Yeah.
Physiologically, we know exactly what it does. We know what purpose it serves. So an entirely mechanical heart is not
a flight of fancy.
But the brain itself is infinitely more complex than the rest of the body put together. And we have an idea. Computers are vaguely, when the Turing machine is a rough design of how the human mind works with some memory and the capacity to recall things. But simulating a brain to a sufficient degree where it's accurately resembling a human brain is, I think, we're miles off that. But when that happens, I think we will be able to, for instance, teleport ourselves. We'll be able to destroy a copy of ourselves here, upload our entire brain data onto whatever the storage format is, and then reload it back. Maybe we'll 3D print ourselves on Mars. But that's a possibility. Now, that seems like it's a long way off. But, 500 years into the future
is not a long way off.
No.
Josh, it's close. It's closer than that. There are these two big human brain projects, big one in Europe and a big one in the United States, and they're actually looking at mapping the neuron-to-neuron connectivity within a brain. And they've now simulated a full human brain in a massive supercomputer. It runs about 500 times slower than real time, and it uses a huge amount of electricity, and it's really expensive. But we can do that now.
Wow. So, okay, so 500 years is way
yeah,
too...
I'm way
you're
off.
Probably about a couple of weeks.
Decade.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
We'll probably be off Earth by then.
Look, I just want to take the discussion into a slightly different direction because Jason's posed a really interesting issue here along ethical lines. How can the human race marvel at the accomplishments of technology while we still have a world where not everyone has clean drinking water? Mm. What can robotics, artificial intelligence add to the quality of life for people living under really dire poverty? Peter Cork, I'll throw that to you.
Maybe get them to run governments.
And that's the way to get out of there.
Stamp corruption out.
Because I think that's the fundamental reason why people in some place, I mean, it's not the only reason, but I think it's a big contributing reason to why there are so many people on Earth who are impoverished and don't have water and sanitation. I think it's effectively bad governance. We know what good governance looks like. You should just put it in a computer and have it run the country.
So maybe things like a voting system that is actually works and it can be not queried by the population would be a starting point, for example.
Yeah, I think there are many things that don't involve either artificial intelligence or robotics that are needed to address these problems.
But I can see what Jason's putting in that, you know, we are so fortunate in some parts of the world that we're actually thinking of ways of avoiding having to do any sort of work, physical work at all. But in the end, it does come down to a human problem, is what you're saying, yeah. Peter. It's not, anything that, that couldn't be resolved by natural resources should we be able to eliminate warfare and corruption and so on. David Dow, have you got any thoughts on that?
Yes. There's a paper I've been looking at by Frey, F-R-E-Y, and Osborne, O-S-B-O-R-N-E, from 2013, and they address the issue of the future of employment and how susceptible are our jobs to computerisation. In fact, that's the title. And I'll quote from it. I beg your pardon. I won't quote from it, but I'll take from an example where they or someone else say, and forgive me for possibly having my wires crossed, there's a, I think it's a fishing village in Kerala in India, and apparently when they got access to mobile phones, this enabled them to communicate in ways which resulted in an increase in their standard of living. So, I mean, the social issues here are very important. We see the people who have got greater and greater power of the computer companies becoming increasingly wealthy, and we see various jobs being endangered. So it would seem to me, and others might differ, that automation is resulting in some being increasingly wealthy. You think of various IT companies that I don't have to name and how wealthy some of the people are who are running them, and various people who not only don't earn too much, but whose jobs are in danger. So I think, while I can't necessarily give a complete answer to your question, I think this issue of trying to have a planet where we look after one another and indeed the other animals. I mean, you know, I think we forget that there are very many other intelligent non-human animal life forms on this planet. I think that as we make the technological advances and we consider our research priorities, that we, pay much attention to the sorts of issues you raise. But some good news is it would appear that at least in one randomly chosen Indian fishing village in Kerala, that mobile phones were of help to them.
There's a great point being made here by Bob on the text. If anyone would like to text in a question or a comment, 0437 774 774 is the number on which to do it. Bob puts, why would robots want to rule the world? So removing that idea of human ambition and quest for power is a rather pleasant one. What do you say to that, Peter?
At the moment, robots, the majority of robots, I would not say are intelligent. The sort of robots that build cars, they're not intelligent. All they know how to do is build a car. The vacuum cleaning robot, 10 million of them on the planet now, they're not particularly intelligent. I mean, that is going straight lines.
They don't want to take over the world, yeah.
They don't want to take over the world. So for a robot to want to take over the world, it's going to have to be explicitly programmed by somebody to want to do that, or to be set up with something like ambition. So I think it's my view, and this could be wrong, is that it would have to be deliberately put into the robot.
Mm.
I can't
see the point of doing it. But somebody might, just because they could. Mm. And perhaps that's the danger.
But that's where, if I extend my little thought game out into the future and can say robots and artificial intelligence gets to a point where it can sufficiently program itself, what's mm-hmm. stopping artificial intelligence from being internally malicious? And so if you have a piece of software whose primary function is to code itself with no particular objective or no particular human input, so if human input stops being important to that actual program, then that is something that could potentially be a worry. And I don't know whether that's feasible
but,
or possible.
To what end? What does a power need? What does a robot need?
Well, I don't know. We'll find out, I guess, once we're all in ashes and our new robot overlords are stomping on our fiery graves.
I would add that there's a possibility that rather than the machine being explicitly programmed to want to take over, that possibly its instructions are to try to learn to simulate human behaviour.
Yeah.
And in the process, mm-hmm. It learns some of our less ideal yeah. traits. And the other things to mention, of course, are we get software glitches and we get hardware glitches. Mm-hmm. And something could be given a lot of responsibility and due to some totally unanticipated software bug or
blackout, anything like that.
Or some, and the blackout, maybe the control system, which is meant to kick in to override it when it gets out of control. Maybe there's a problem with the hardware, some piece of hardware fails, and suddenly we've got this piece of equipment which is running extremely fast and far too fast for us to really know what on earth is going wrong, and no one really able to find the off switch.
Like so, a child.
Yeah, kids are good at that.
Yeah.
Just turn it off and on, Mum.
Yeah.
I get that quite a bit. But look, we've got some more people have been waiting very patiently to say their piece. Greg, thank you for waiting. What would you like to contribute?
Yes, good evening, everyone. I enjoy the topic. My question is, if we develop AI to the degree where the AI becomes self-conscious, and we have... Will we open that Pandora's box that we can't close? Because I'm concerned that if, say, for example, we put the American Defense Network totally under control of an AI entity, and it decides that humans are superfluous and goes around nuking selected targets.
Well, some people say George Bush is a bit of a robot, so, you know, maybe they are already under
look at
control.
Josh go. Thing.
Thank you. I've been Josh Thagrove. Have a good night, Australia.
No, but seriously, Greg, this is exactly what we are. This is our manic defence, to laugh at things that actually scare the bejesus out of us. That is a terrifying thought.
My short answer to that is yes. It is a Pandora's box, and we just have to hope we can retain control of whatever system we develop. But we're talking off air earlier about the financial markets, still by and large a system that we have some control over, but from time to time we actually lose control of that system, and that happened I think in 2010 with the flash crash. It's also called Fat Finger Thursday, where the system went haywire and it took months and months and months to actually determine what was at the root of that. So we have a system there, and it's not quite the, you know, warfare system that you're thinking of that may end the world or end human life, but it's a system that now is so technologically interdependent on itself that humans are almost superfluous.
What would you say to that, Peter?
It comes back a little bit to what I was saying earlier about the trend in warfare to increasing amount of automation, increasing amount of robotics. At the moment, there's still a human being who makes the final, the ethical decision, if you like, on whether or not you fire a weapon, and people wanting to cross that line. And I think as soon as we cross that line, then the scenario that I call a mention becomes possible. If we always make sure that before, you know, anybody can be hurt or killed, a human needs to be involved, then perhaps we can keep that at bay. But there are so many pressures to not have humans do that, to have that automated. And I think that's what we really have to fight.
What about the area of law? Thank you very much for your call, Greg. What about the area of law? You know, governments take so long to get their heads around the speed of this technology. I mean, I think we saw those as both sides of politics struggle to explain broadband, internet, metadata. And yet it seems that we're going to need a whole series of laws around what can be, what is programmable, what is ethical. What sort of hope do you have that that will be done? Who will be consulted, given that, you know, our scientific research seems to be ever diminishing? Who will be the crossover between science, law, and our communities and what they look like in a world of robots and artificial intelligence?
Back in 1967, one of the artificial intelligence pioneers, Ray Solomonoff, he said that we'd be going along with machines which seemed quite smart, and then suddenly in a month's time, bang, we'd have a very, very intelligent machine, and we wouldn't really have had any experience on how to deal with it. And back in 1967, he didn't anticipate that happening any time soon, but he did say, well, it'd be great if an intelligent group of people devoted a lot of time to think about this.
Mm.
So right near the start, Professor Peter Cork mentioned this open letter from the Future of Life Institute. And this was just a few days ago, the 11th of January, and they've listed some things which they think would be good for us to focus on and to put some fail-safe measures in place. So as for who should be making the decisions, I'd like to sidestep that one, but I think there should be very much a public discussion like we're having at the moment. And this open letter adds to Solomonoff back in 1967 and everyone who's been talking about it since and possibly before. So, yeah, we need to talk about it more, and I don't see why everyone can't be involved.
No, I think everyone will sort of have to be, because everybody's interests will be affected essentially by robotics and artificial intelligence as much as they are already, but even more so. Peter, can you see a way in which a role that government can play to somehow legislate about what can be programmed, what's not programmable, what's ethical, who gets to make what decisions about what can happen?
I don't think we know enough yet to be able to create legislation. I mean, we have legislation and ethics protocols in place for anything that involves living organisms or experimentation with human subjects, animal subjects. That's been in place for a long, long time. This new frontier of artificial intelligence and what it means for society, I think it's just slowly starting to dawn on people, perhaps because the pace is picking up. So every year we're seeing more and more capability. And some pretty smart and influential people have signed this open letter. It's quite interesting. I was having a look last night at the people who've signed up to it. And they must have – I'm assuming that they must have some, you know, really genuine and heartfelt concerns about what's going on. So I think this has got to be the start. These people are influential in the technological field. They've made this letter. It's got a lot of publicity. We're having a conversation tonight, which I think is great. There need to be many more of these conversations from which we may perhaps synthesize what are the really big issues. From that, legislation might flow. But I don't think any country is thinking about legislation around artificial life.
Can I pose a question to both of our guests, professors Dow and Cork? And I didn't realise that letter is largely just signatures, which is fantastic. But
yeah,
this
there's an accompanying paper.
Right. It's just signatures. That's pretty boring. They failed their open letter.
No, the letter's actually quite well written and insightful. It's worth a read. I'm not sure, Georgie, whether you put links to that on anything associated with the show, but it'd be a good resource to put up.
We'll see if we can do that.
That's a good idea. Yeah. But if I can pose a question, and we briefly touched on this, but with it's loosely called the teleportation problem, where if you are able to fully encapsulate your state as a living organism in every respect, your brain function, the exact impulse of every neuron and every single atom in your body. So
you're instantaneously cloned.
You're instantaneously cloned, the perfect state of your being. You're then destroyed at one location, perfectly organically rebuilt at another, or mechanically or organically, and then you're uploaded, say, on Mars or Venus or wherever it is, somewhere in the outer galaxy. We've pioneered some form of travel that can get us across the universe. Are you still the same person?
I'll go first, in that I've considered this for a while because I remember reading about it ages ago, and I have no idea. Peter, your turn.
I'd be really, really tempted not to kill the other copy.
Yeah, well,
I get so much more done.
My guess is that it's not me, yeah. But if both of us are hanging around, you know, I even wonder whether or not I'll get headaches from interference effects of brainwaves. And I don't know. Excellent question.
And you may not get on, right?
No comment.
The other thing I'd like to put to you is, can robots or things be capable of being bad or wicked?
Yes, turning left only.
Well, that was your fault because you failed your project. That's true.
But I didn't sleep for 36 hours, you see. That was at the heart of that issue.
Okay, well, so that was, again, and I put that on
it.
You.
Yeah. Well, I fixed it until it caught fire at a public engineering exhibition.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Well, they're certainly capable of wreaking havoc, but to ascribe a human moral intention to them, pass. Peter?
I think that they can be stupid and they can be inept. I'm not sure if you could call them bad. I agree with David. It's a human characteristic that I'm not sure you could actually put onto an unintelligent machine.
So they can't be capable of being virtuous then either?
Well, I wouldn't say.
Or noble or selfless?
Peter, you go.
I was going to say, I mean, a robot vacuum cleaner is selfless. I mean, if the room was burning, the robot vacuum cleaner would just keep vacuuming the floor because it's
stupid. But it wouldn't rescue the cat.
That's a design flaw. That's all that is.
Absolutely not. It wouldn't rescue the cat. And you could perceive it as being virtuous, but it's not. It's actually being stupid.
Yeah.
It's not even being stupid. It's just being a robot doing what it was programmed to do. You can say no more about it than that.
On the other hand, you could say, well, some might say exactly the same thing of us, that we're genetically programmed and then we eat our food and whatever. So there are some that would say that we are machines, we might be biological and they, in inverted commas, might be electronic, but to some degree, you think someone's bad because you look at their actions and you presume that that is the act of a bad person. A psychopath might not necessarily feel any notion of having done anything wrong. That doesn't make them a desirable person to hang out with. But morally, you could say, look, they didn't actually realise.
Which is your insanity defence right there.
And I don't know. Charles Manson looks like pretty good company.
He just looks a bit like you.
That's why.
Can I just put this question to you guys as well? If artificial intelligence does take over, we were talking earlier, Josh, you raised a really interesting issue about where we might sit with legal jobs as a job that looks like it should be safeguarded, but again,
a judge effectively. Could you entirely create an algorithm to replace a judge?
And if any job where there ought to be a sort of a blind following of, well, this is what you do, this maybe the law is a perfectly suited,
but it's not, and that
it's so subjective.
That for me, with many of my friends being in the law, that's what I find their almost Achilles' heel and their hubris is that they can't see that the law ought be the most clearly defined stream that there is.
No, and many of my friends who've turned up before judges, some of them with great references from other judges, doctors, lawyers, and those who've turned up without those. And I tell you, they fare quite differently.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yep.
For similar crimes. What do you think about that, Peter Cork?
Some part of me thinks that should be able to be automated. There's a whole set of laws, which is like a program to some extent, and there's a whole lot of history. Previous cases that could all be in the brain of an artificial intelligence system. But I think there is some human touch that does need to be applied, perhaps particularly to something like sentencing. But maybe lower courts maybe could be somewhat automated. But I think, the highest court in the land, I think, probably still needs to be have human judgment and wisdom.
Especially when you talk about
artificial intelligence a lot. I'm not sure the wisdom to me is something a little bit separate.
Well, especially to create new legislation, you would essentially want humans doing that. So the High Court.
So politicians are safe. That's a shame.
Well, yes, I think they are. But I guess we can all just enjoy the thought of a world without lawyers just for a moment. Okay, it's past now. We have had somebody waiting to ask a question for a very long time. Carl is a beekeeper and he needs to put a question to you. Thank you, Carl, for waiting.
How many bees you keep, Carl?
Yeah, thank you very much. Peter and Josh, just got a question. 40-odd years ago, my father said to me, computers will never take over our job, which is beekeeping. Obviously, because it's so complex. Have you ever put any thought into that? And being close to nature, as bees are, which is important to life, I can't see it happening, can you?
I don't know. I don't know if anyone's job's safe, Carl. You're saying, is the job of a beekeeper going to be exempt from artificial intelligence or robotics because it is so sophisticated and so close to nature?
I don't believe it ever will, and that's what I'm saying.
All right, well, we'll put it to the panel. What do they think?
We had bees when I was a kid, and so you put on the whole kit and caboodle with the mask and the smoke gun and go and rob the honey from the bees. That was a lot of fun.
Could a robot do it?
A robot probably could do it. I'm not sure it would make economic sense, but I think if you had a lot of money, you could probably develop a robot that would open up a hive and take out the combs and remove the honey from the combs and put them back in.
I'm sure we could also, at some point, artificially create honey. It's probably not a very popular view, but we possibly wouldn't
need... Wash your mouth out with honey
possibly
right now, Josh.
Wouldn't need
artificial
bees.
Honey.
Sure, why not? It's delicious.
And people are making artificial insects. So there's a pretty big project happening at Harvard making these tiny little mechatronic gadgets that, you know, are as big as an insect and they can fly. They haven't got solved the energy source yet. So it can only fly, you know, in a small area within a lab. But people are making – I don't quite know the use of them, but people are trying to make them.
What about those little robots that I've seen on medical programs that can actually enter the body and attack cells? They're so tiny. Can you talk about those at all, Peter or David?
I think it's fiction.
Oh, it just hasn't happened yet?
No.
No, it hasn't happened yet, that you can actually have things attack the body from within.
I think the closest is there's a little camera pill that you can swallow and it goes all the way through and pops out the other end
and takes pictures
as it goes.
But it doesn't do anything therapeutic.
No.
It just captures images.
Not that you can inject into your body, but there's robots used in surgery, but they are actually controlled by a surgeon.
Maybe I dreamt it.
There's been stories about it, right? There's a movies about
you
it,
want me to
but
pinch
I
you
don't
now.
Think it's real.
Yeah, I've certainly heard movies of it. I think that, you know, safe thing to say, down the track it will come. And, you know, time frame, pass. But down the track I think it will come. And with the beekeeping... Look, that Fran Osborne study I mentioned before, it doesn't explicitly mention beekeepers as far as I know, but it talks about social intelligence and creativity and perception and manipulation, and that those sorts of things help you keep a job. The example I gave before about the fishing village was from the economist Robert Jensen and a TED talk by Andrew McAfee. But I guess with regard to the beekeeping, firstly, the robot's not going to be too worried about being stung. Does beekeeping require social intelligence? It presumably requires maybe not too much interaction with other humans, but certainly, I guess, some intuition about bees. Does it require creativity? And does it require perception and manipulation? Well, certainly it requires that. I feel that if we don't destroy the planet first in one holocaust or another, that we'll find more and more jobs gradually being taken over by automation. But when it becomes economically viable and when we're able to do it, I don't know. It might not be for several lifetimes.
We're not going to get to all your calls. Thank you very much for your call, Carl, and for waiting on so long to speak to us. Thank you very, very much, Professor Peter Cork, Science and Engineering Faculty, Electrical Engineering, Computer Science, Robotics and Aerospace Systems from Queensland University of Technology. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to join us.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
No, it was really great to have you. And Associate Professor David Dow, Faculty of Information Technology at Monash University, thank you so much for your time. And Josh Ladgrove, thank you. I think, do you know whose jobs I think are safe?
Ours.
Comedians.
Yep.
Cannot be done by a computer.
Not yet.
Robots that only turn left make people laugh.
Yeah, that's true. And when they
catch
fire. We've
got to move beyond slapstick.
Can I leave us with one quick thought?
Yes.
There's a theory that's now gaining a bit of momentum that suggests our entire universe is nothing more than a simulation.
Mm.
How's that? Chew on that.
Brain officially exploded. Mind blown.